We have our monthly check-in right now with the Connecticut Department of Transportation. Josh Morgan is back. And boy, Josh, it has been very busy for the DOT within the last week. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. Always good to be with you. Yeah, it's been pretty hectic, pretty wild past few days, but certainly happy with the outcome. Getting 95 opened on Sunday.
Can we just talk about, first of all, that to me was done in record time. I mean, the governor said more times than I'd like to count, Garrett Ucolito, the commissioner for the DOT, everybody basically agreeing that the earliest we were going to see both sides of the highway open after the I-95 fiasco last week, the earliest was going to be 6 a.m. Monday. This opened before church got out on Sunday, both sides of the highway. How in the world did that happen?
Yeah, and that hope for 6 a.m. Monday for that rush hour, I mean, that was the goal, but it was never a guarantee. You know, we didn't know what those conditions were going to be like, any obstacles that would get in the way of the demolition and the repair to the roadway. Just that, you know, the hats off to Yonkers Contracting, who came in. They're doing a job up in Westport, but they brought in a whole bunch of heavy machinery and equipment from New York State. They had a police escort to get them through the traffic jams into Norwalk. The operating engineers, the laborers who are on site handling the demolition, the cleanup, just absolutely incredible work. It was done so coordinated, and just really, you have that much equipment on the road. We see a lot of comments saying, oh, how come we can't do a lot of infrastructure projects as quickly as we did that? Demolition is obviously a little bit different than construction, but the whole highway was closed. So we had that live camera up at through the weekend so people could tune in. But you could see, you know, four, five, six different excavators, dump trucks, heavy pieces of equipment taking up every single travel lane. Usually if we're doing work, we're taking one lane at a time, which slows us down. So they were working. They knew their mission was to get the highway open by 6 a.m. Monday. And we couldn't have been more proud of everyone involved to get that highway open ahead of schedule on Sunday so there would be minimal impacts to that Monday morning commute.
And, you know, Josh, as we were listening to the most recent press conference that happened Monday morning and the governor and state officials all coming together, even Senator Blumenthal saying we're going to call on the federal government to pay for the replacement of that Fairfield Avenue bridge. He said it could be $20 million. It could be more than that. He says the federal government has funding that they should put forward for this. I wanted to talk, though, about, I know it was sort of a you know, putting it lightly, but the governor kind of mentioned the fact that this bridge in Norwalk, it was only replaced 10 years ago. And I wanted to talk about how, unfortunately, how common it has been, I guess, in Connecticut. I would say even just in the U.S., we've seen these things happen where bridges are collapsing or we're seeing trucks ram into bridges. I mean, let's talk about, I guess, sort of the history, at least we've seen here in our state and what we've tried to improve upon, even down to trucks that are where they shouldn't be, for example. Not that this truck was in the wrong place, but we've heard too many times, trucks on the Merritt Parkway, for example, GPS leading them the wrong way, especially if they're out-of-staters. Let's talk about, if you don't mind, how we've tried to tackle this issue of making sure our highways are safe, especially when you're talking about, you know, tankers like this one that was really what sparked the blaze, talking about these massive trucks on our highways and certainly the infrastructure, you know, our bridges being impacted by these types of crashes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, truck traffic is really important to the economy of the region, to the country, moving fuel, moving goods. It's a necessity to have trucks, you know, come through Connecticut. We do see unauthorized vehicles on the Merritt Parkway. We're working on some different signs, potentially some pavement markings. What we're hearing, especially from the trucking community, is, you know, those drivers, they're really not focused with their eyes ahead, you know, looking hundreds of yards down the highway. They're really focused right in front of the nose of their truck. So maybe we can put some pavement markings about low bridge clearances. You know, we try to work with the GPS providers. We certainly have information out to the trucking GPS providers about where those low bridges are. But if someone is maybe using, Google Maps or Apple Maps, that information won't necessarily always be shown. So, you know, making sure our signs are there, making sure that we have the DMV truck squad out there like they were over the weekend to try to keep those larger trucks off the Merritt Parkway and avoiding those low bridge areas. But certainly what happened this weekend with the tanker truck was just, you know, a perfect storm of the crash, and where that vehicle ultimately came to rest is really what was the cause of that Fairfield Avenue bridge having to come down. It wasn't necessarily the crash or any damage to the supports. It was the fire that damaged the steel, that damaged the supports. So, you know, it's something that we keep an eye on. And unfortunately, these crashes do happen, and why we're just so vigilant and just reminding the public the need to slow down, pay attention, make sure they're being aware of their surroundings so we don't have these tragedies. But, you know, the good thing about this past weekend is that, you know, we had to take the bridge down. We're going to replace the bridge. Thankfully, no one lost their life. We can replace the bridge, but we can't replace someone's life.
Yeah, it's very true. And I do have to say, Josh, I know there were questions about if, God forbid, this happens again, because life happens and, you know, and we're hoping our highways are here for a very, very long time. So unfortunately, you know, tragedy does strike on our roadways. And one of the questions that some of our listeners, especially if they lived in the Norwalk area where they had to get off for about three exits there because it was shut down for several days, was the infrastructure. Did we notice anything when we have to pull these cars, these thousands of cars and trucks onto our secondary roadways because of a closure on our highways, which does happen? Was there anything that we took away that we should be looking at, whether that's infrastructure needs, whether that is, I don't know. I didn't know if there was anything we took away from the impact on our local roads because we had to pull so many people off of I-95 from Thursday through the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, about 150,000 vehicles are traveling underneath that bridge every day. Taking those cars off 95 and asking them to go local roads is why there was so much congestion, why there was so much frustration. And really, the, you know, credit to Norwalk Police, the state police, you know, they were set up trying to, you know, get cars and vehicles through as quickly as they could. It's a major corridor for commercial and vehicular traffic. And if any of that is shut down and those hundreds of thousands of cars get detoured onto local streets, they simply can't handle that volume. It's why we're, you know, working hard to make sure that our interstates and our local roads are up to the capacity. But it also reminded us the very important need of public transportation. We were so happy that we were able to work with Metro North to get extra trains, extra capacity running through the weekend, and they were on standby to have more trains running on Monday as well. So, yeah, anything that this really highlights is that there's a lot of cars on our roadways, and if those highways are impacted, it just creates a ripple effect onto those local roads. So anything we can do to encourage people to use the bus, take the train, and get out of their cars would certainly alleviate some of that congestion on a daily basis.
We have Josh Morgan here from the Department of Transportation, and we know we are less than 2 days away from the 2024 legislative session wrapping up here in Connecticut. And I wanted to know, Josh, what we should keep an eye on. Is there any legislation being discussed right now or getting support up in Hartford that will impact our highways, our roadways, really impact the average Connecticut driver that you can tell us about?
Yeah, something that we're watching closely and remain hopeful that it will pass in the last, you know, 48 hours or so of the session is the work zone speed camera program. We did a pilot in 2023 and saw really great success about driver behaviors changing in highway work zones. People were slowing down. People who were working on the highway felt safer when those speed cameras were in their work zones. So this already has passed the House. We're hopeful it will get taken up in the Senate before the session ends, because we saw the real world results, and it made drivers more focused, made them drive slower, and it made our crews and contractors feel safer on the highway. So again, we hope that becomes a permanent program here this session.
So the other thing too, Josh, and I wasn't sure if this was part of that legislation. We had a young woman on the show. She's a tow truck driver in Connecticut, and this was something that tow truck drivers could opt into. It wasn't mandated. You don't have to fund the money to put this on your trucks. But she had talked about installing blue lights, for example, blue flashing lights for tow truck drivers, because as you know, and we certainly talk about a lot of the times, the Flagman campaign and the Slow Down, Move Over law and trying to bring more attention to this. She had mentioned being able to install that on trucks if companies want to take that upon themselves and put it on their trucks, just to give
themselves another opportunity to better protect themselves from people who are speeding and not moving over. Do we know if there's any movement on that? Is that included in the legislation you're talking about? I don't know.
That wouldn't be in the DOT bill. It could be in, you know, a different piece of legislation. But, you know, there's certain rules and requirements for the types of lights that are used for responders. But, you know, certainly tow truck operators are considered first responders. They have to come out to the scenes to, you know, help move equipment, move vehicles off the roadway. And we certainly have seen their drivers, you know, their equipment get damaged, their drivers get hurt, get killed. So certainly anything that could make them safer, make our roads safer, is certainly a good idea.
And another thing too, Josh, in my news earlier this week, we learned about a pretty horrific crash. Luckily, nobody was hurt. But I shouldn't say nobody was hurt. Nobody died, I should say. Seven people got hurt. They were sent to the hospital. This was in Orange. And the first electman actually acknowledged that this is one of the most dangerous intersections that they have in Orange. And I was thinking about the very latest on the red light cameras. This is something that each municipality has the right. They are not forced, again, to do this. This is something they can decide to do on their own. They can decide to install red light cameras at what are typically dangerous intersections in their towns or cities, and then put those plans forward. Is that still active? Like, if towns or cities want to put a plan together and present it to the DOT, to the state, can they still do that? And how do they proceed if so?
Yep. The legislation passed that towns and cities need to submit their plans to the DOT. But it's not, you know, a period of time where there's an open and close for the application period. It's a rolling basis. It's open all the time. We have not received any applications yet for red light cameras or speed cameras, but certainly know that there are, you know, several communities around the state that are trying to have this technology installed. So it's really, like you said, up to the individual community. It's not a state mandate. They can opt into the program. And the DOT is here to provide guidance, review those plans, make sure that they're meeting the letter of the law. So we certainly expect those applications to start rolling in the next several weeks.
Now, is that something too, Josh, if people, you know, want more information on this? I know that obviously towns and cities probably know this. But if, for example, if there's a listener right now who's a resident and feels, you know what, hey, I haven't heard anything from my first electman or my mayor. I haven't heard anything from our planning and zoning commission, for example. But they want to present this at like a next town hall or something. Where can they go? Do you have a website or anything where people can learn more information and present this and say, hey, we've got a couple dangerous intersections. We should really think about putting a plan in place and having these cameras so we can hold drivers accountable and make it safer for people living in our municipality.
Yeah, on the DOT website, ct.gov/DOT, we have information and resources about the program. But if one of your listeners is in a community and, you know, they're interested or supportive of seeing this technology installed in their town, you know, reach out to your mayor, your first selectman, reach out to the you know, police department, and, you know, express your support of that, ask questions. You know, the DOT will, you know, review plans, they'll approve plans, but ultimately the process has to start with the town or city. They have to select the locations. They have to have that public input and engagement with their residents before it comes to us. So if one of your listeners is supportive or has questions about it, you know, they can give us a call, but really the best place to start would be with the local officials.
And again, Josh Morgan, I want to thank you and the Department of Transportation for making WICC a priority. We are now having you on a monthly basis. I think this is so important since, I mean, gosh, most people who are listening to AM radio, if it's not while they're in the shower, it's while they're in the car. So we care about our roadways. We care about our safety driving through the state. And we thank you for the work that you do and for making the time for WICC each month. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Melissa. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Sounds good. Josh Morgan from the Connecticut Department of Transportation here on WICC.